We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
So welcome in. Today's guest is going to be Jeremiah Dickey from Boise State University. Jeremiah, so great to have you with me.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity, and it's good seeing you.
Same here. Look, I know you've had a ton going on, so I'm going to be respectful of your time, but I do have a number of things I want to talk about, and you know, realignment's a hot topic, and we're going to come back to that. I want to go backwards first, if I could. And you know, I think about when you actually took this job in January. You know, you're taking a job right in the middle of a pandemic, probably the craziest time in my career or your career, any of our careers. And then on top of that, you were thrown into a football coaching search at the same exact time. So I want to talk about both those things. We can talk about them collectively or separately, but I'm interested in just sort of the notion of diving in. You're coming to a new place. You are trying to learn what alignment looks like, what brand looks like, feels like. And at the same time, you've got to make probably for what most people would consider the most important part of an athletic director's job in many ways, and that's hiring, at least as it relates to external constituent groups, hiring a coach, right? So take us back to that a little bit. You know, talk about hitting the ground running and how you chose to dive into that coaching hire right out of the gate.
No, I appreciate the question. And you know, it was a very interesting process, starting when I was going through the interview process through Zoom and committing to this institution sight unseen. And prior to even signing my contract, I was already hitting the ground running as it pertained to hiring a football coach. And I can't say enough about my path to the chair and you know, the people that have poured into me, such as Mac Rhodes and Hunter Yurecek. And so understanding the hiring process and having gone through that before, it really gave me a leg up that as soon as I did my press conference, I had my first head football coach interview that afternoon. And so I felt prepared for that. I knew enough to be dangerous about Boise State and had been following for a number of years. And I was fortunate to have some great people around me on my team here that provided some information that really allowed me to speak to who we are, and ultimately I had the vision of where we were going. And so I was obviously not the most ideal situation, but you play the hand you're dealt, and I felt prepared for that.
Did help me remember, I know the process had already begun. Was the university using a search firm to sort of help collect, an initial group, or were they doing it independent of a search firm? You know, you alluded to obviously the fact that you had an interview that afternoon. So obviously some groundwork was being laid in the process. What was that like?
Yeah, I was dealing with Todd Turner. And which was great, with his experience. And so going through that athletic director process, once I had committed, we quickly turned the page to the football search, and they had, had done some groundwork to best prepare me for best prepare whoever ended up being the athletic director. And then obviously I had a few candidates that I was interested in as I was also, doing my research and wanted to make sure I was prepared. I knew we were going to have to move quickly. And so, when I hit the ground in Boise that Sunday, I had my interview, or I had my press conference Monday. And we already had that first interview scheduled. So it was as chaotic as it may seem. It was a very smooth process. And I can't thank Todd and Drew and their team enough in helping prepare me for that first interview.
You know, there's always the thought process. People like to talk about having a list of candidates in your back pocket, should you ever end up in these situations. And, a lot of times when you're talking about that, you're speaking from perspective of you're already sitting in the chair somewhere and you know what institutional fit looks like and who might be the appropriate fit. And I guess in your situation, you probably, you aspired to be an athletic director and were, you're definitely beginning to be in the mix that, being talked about at different places. And I'm sure you probably had interviews that people may or may not even know about, but you're obviously looking at the field, at the coaching candidates that are out there as you're growing into your work, and then you transition and you're here, right? So would you say that some of that, you alluded to the fact that you had been thinking about candidates, doing research on candidates, was that informative to the process as well? I mean, I know at the end of the day, you got the right guy, right? But I'm just curious, since if you brought that with you into the chair.
I did. I was fortunate that the year before at Baylor, we had gone through a head coaching search. And so it was always on my mind as the sport program administrator for football for the last 7 or 8 years. And having gone through some of these searches at the University of Houston and obviously Baylor, I felt prepared. And we always had a running list. And I knew who we were as Broncos here and what our brand was. And our pipeline of coaches is strong, but being a national brand, I wanted to bring something different to the table. And ultimately, Andy was a no-brainer in terms of a candidate, but we wanted to do a national search because that's who we are. And I wanted to make sure that I hired someone that wasn't just a Bronco and part of the family tree that we have here, but would best represent us. And in this case, it just so happened that it ended up being someone from that tree. And so, being prepared for those moments, that's as I was doing my daily duties at Baylor, that was something that was always in the back of my mind, that if and when the time came and there was an opportunity for me, that I would be able to hit the ground running. You don't necessarily draw it up that way in accepting a job and having to hire a football coach your first week on the job, but I felt we navigated that well, and I had a lot of people that assisted through that process, and grateful that we found our guy, and can't speak highly enough of Coach Avalos.
So Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, good friend, he used to always say that he felt like AD years were like dog years, and maybe it's not 1 for 7 like dogs, but they're at least 1 for 3. Or something like that, and so I think there's right. There's truth in that, and then to come into the scenario that you came into, let's set aside the coaching hire for just a second. You're becoming a first-time athletic director, but you're in the middle of this pandemic. I've talked to folks in my own company who've talked about they feel like this last year they've had 3 years of growth in 1 year, just because we've all been forced into or backed into that corner of the things we've had to learn, the things we've had to do, how we've had to interact. You know, maybe your vision of what you thought this first year was going to look like, and I know we're not through your first year yet, but your vision of what you thought it was going to look like, but then now having to sort of approach it through the lens of a pandemic, at least in the first several months, what it's been like.
No, I mean, one, we're still going through it. And, you know, having come from Baylor in the last year, you know, I was well versed in what needed to be done. And, you know, and I do think it probably helped me, you know, being a new AD, I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have an idea of, you know, what it was going to look like, period. And so, it allowed me to navigate it, I think, you know, maybe better than most, because it was all new to me. And it really forced me to create some relationships on campus very quickly. I feel like I've been here 3 years. You know, when you hire a football coach your first week and you're developing these relationships with your CFO on campus and your Office of General Counsel and your president, you know, 6 weeks in, and I, you know, I felt like I had been here 6 months. So it really, you know, provided a path for me to help me navigate, you know, COVID and some of the challenges as we went through that. And so I'm grateful for that process. And you know, I feel like, you know, everything that's been thrown at us, you know, because of those relationships, it's made it that much easier, you know, to ultimately get to the end and navigate that accordingly.
Yeah. So, you know, Boise has always been known for the blue field, right? But I think more so known now in more recent years for the successful football coaches that have been there. And there's no doubt you've had a tremendous run of successful football coaches at Boise State University. And so you've had the opportunity, as you've said, to be in the Southwest and to see some really good football, and you recognize what that looks like. And so you come into Boise State and you know the history, and you now had a chance to sort of sit in it. You folks told you what it might look like. Your staff told you what it might look like as it related to the hire. But now you've had the chance to sit in it. You've had the chance to launch into a fall football season. There's obviously something there that has led to the continuity of success of Boise State football. Can you put your finger on it? What are the things that you think are present at Boise State that have allowed for this consistent success now over quite some time?
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly tremendous, the amount of success this institution has had in a very short amount of time. This is our 25th year at the FBS level. And so we're still in the infant stages of growth. And you look at our history of, you know, Coach Cutter and Coach Hawkins and Coach Pete and Coach Harse and now Andy. We've been very fortunate to have an unbelievable family tree when it comes to coaches. And I look at, you know, and you hear us talk about it a lot with the blue turf, you know, thinking and, you know, a lot of that ties into the work ethic. And I think that's something that separates us. It's something that unites the community. It's who we are, you know, and we're true to that. And so I think that's a big part of it. We've, you know, being 25 years old at this, at the FBS level, we have had to find, you know, solutions and opportunity where others maybe have found failure, and I think that work ethic has really driven that. No matter what's been thrown at us, we find a way forward, and you know, I'm really grateful for that because that's who I am. And so you talk a lot about fit as an athletic director, and that's one of the most important things when looking at jobs, and you know, this place very much is who I am, and I'm grateful for that.
Do you think, and I'm, this is truly not a leading question, by the way. I hope it's not. one of the things that I've found interesting is places that begin to develop tradition, you know, not necessarily going out and hiring someone who's new to the school or doesn't have familiarity with the school, but sort of staying in, if you would, the family at some level, right? So there's some interconnectivity at Boise State among these football coaching hires. Is it a fair statement to say that you think that's been part of the success as well?
I think so. I think that's fair to say. I mean, you know, there is a level of, consistency and you know, and what I'm trying to take here is the new athletic director is to take that into the other 17 sport programs, you know, 18 overall that we sponsor. We're not just football and everyone else. We're strong across the board and to really, you know, have that level of consistency in that football space. You know, it's established our brand, but we've barely scratched the surface on what that ultimately could become.
So let's track on that for just a second. I was thinking about the fact that, you know, you obviously worked with Kelvin for a while at Houston and then with Scott at Baylor, two highly successful coaches. Both were at the pinnacle of their game in many ways this past spring, and the nation saw that. Being around them in the way that you were around them, and I know that you had close relationships there. What did you learn from them as leaders, as basketball coaches first? And then let's pivot off of that to what application do you see from what you've learned or observed from those two particular coaches that you can help your coach, your program in basketball at Boise State achieve, you know, the next level, so to speak?
Yeah, first, seeing both of them play in the Final Four, it still gives me chills. You know, that was a proud moment as someone who played but a small part in their success and really proud of how far, you know, both those programs have come and how successful. You know, with Coach Sampson, you know, that process started, you know, when Mac Rhodes and Hunter Yurcheck were, you know, were at the University of Houston, and to see that plan play out and someone like Coach Sampson, he knows what he wants. He has a process in how he wants to get there, and he's committed to it and consistent. And you know, it's you know, considering when we first got the University of Houston and you had heard in the industry, you know, it being the sleeping giant, you know, you're seeing that play out, and I'm really proud for what they've accomplished, and Coach Sampson is a huge part of that. He's a great man. He's a leader of men. You know, he truly cares about those student athletes off the court. You know, and he's truly created this family environment that they found success, and you know, he's someone that I very much look up to and you know, watch from afar even now, and really appreciate what he's done with his program. You know, Coach Drew, same thing. You're not going to meet a nicer guy in this industry, and what you see publicly is what you see behind closed doors. He is consistent and you know, that Baylor family is strong and, you know, but I learned something from him. You know, he adapted and was able to pivot in some of his, you know, maybe his style of leading, you know, and really tying back into, you know, the theme of joy, you know, Jesus, others and yourself and tying it into the mission of that institution and how those student athletes play for him and play for each other and play for something bigger than themselves. You know, it was remarkable to see and very much was committed to a process and, you know, what, you know, he inherited at Baylor, what he took over. You know, Coach Drew does not get nearly as much credit as he probably has earned and deserves. That was a very tough situation and he's had consistent success and he found a way to take it to the next level. You know, he's someone I also follow, from afar and you know, but not just as a coach, as a husband, as a father, you know, and as a Christian. And that's something that means the world to me, but he's a great guy. And you know, I'm a huge fan in terms of how. You know, on your second question and how I can take some of those experiences and impart them, you know, and hopefully impact our current situation here. You know, I see a lot of both of them in Coach Rice. And, you know, I said it before, you know, we're not just a one trick pony. We are we have a solid foundation and we have unbelievable coaches here and specifically in men's basketball and women's basketball. And, you know, I think the foundation is there for us to really turn the corner and become consistent. And that requires me as the athletic director to pour into our coaches and to pour into those student athletes and provide them the resources to find success. And that really excites me. I've been a part of football for the better part of my career, but basketball is a love that I've had since I was a little kid. And I'm really excited to take this, to partner with Coach Rice and Gordy in women's basketball.
Fantastic. You mentioned a minute ago, Jeremiah, and I want to go back to this because we could have just passed over this, but you said that this is a fit, this is a place of fit for you, right? You were the right person for the job. It's the right place for you. One of your mentors, who you've mentioned already, said that Jeremiah Dickey is about faith, family, Mexican food, and the Dave Matthews Band. So I don't know how all that dovetails into Boise State necessarily, but tell me why you're a fit at Boise State.
Some of what we talked about, I learned a long time ago that there are very few things I can control in this process. And one is how I show up every day, and how hard I work and my attitude. And that's what I see here. We don't have what everyone else has, but we're going to find a way forward. It's ingrained in this community and in this institution. We're a young institution. And so, this is, I know AD say it a lot, but this is a dream job for me. I'm so fortunate for my path and the opportunities I had along the way to prepare me for this. But this checked a lot of boxes. My family is important. I wanted a community that would embrace them and that they would embrace. And the family aspect of Boise is something that I heard, as I called around asking about this job, that every single person I spoke to spoke of family and community. And so that was important to me. I just, when I look at what we're capable of doing here, and the places that I've been along the way in my career, every single thing, every single pitfall, every single mistake I've made, Mike, has led to this moment, and it allows me to draw from those. And there hasn't been a day that I haven't felt prepared for what I'm doing or for what's next for us as an institution. And so if anything, I'm even more energized. As people ask me, are you everything we're going through in this industry and it's historic, but I'm more energized and positive about the direction we're going than I've ever been. And I'm excited about that.
Leadership lessons here, right and left, Jeremiah, the one thing I pick up on that you said, you're talking about learning from failures, right? Or pitfalls. And right. This is so many times an ego driven business. It's about winning. It's about ascending to the mountaintop. And certainly that's how athletic departments are measured a lot of times, how many check marks are in the left-hand column. But I would tell you that as a leader, an aspiring leader, it is those places where we gain our scar tissue that I think we become the best leaders we can be. And, I've said before, show me an athletic director who's never taken a hit on Twitter or had someone criticize them, and I'll show you an athletic director who's never made a decision. This is a decision based business. And you're going to have failures. And Coach Dickey, who was one of my mentors, used to always say in college athletics, it's where the highs are higher and the lows are lower. And how you're going to be most able to succeed is to find a comfortable space somewhere in the middle of all that. And so I think that's a little bit of what you're saying, if I understand correctly.
Absolutely. Sitting in this chair and it's funny because, I've talked to Mac and Hunter about this as two mentors and people that I'm very close with. I had quite a few calls with them early on and in a way apologizing for judging. there's a lot that comes with this and it's not easy. But I can tell you this, that, I probably lean on my mistakes more than even my successes in terms of the decisions that I make on a daily basis. I am so grateful for my failures because every success that we've had here in the short time I've been here, I can look back on a failure and say that impacted my decision and how we were moving forward. And so, Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Good stuff. So I can't have this conversation with you without talking about realignment for a few minutes. You know, I try to have these podcasts not be, you know, not be time specific, but it's October 1st for those who are listening as we record this. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation over the last few weeks about realignment. There's been a lot of conversation this week about realignment as it relates to some schools in the Mountain West, and particularly Boise State. And I know you had a statement earlier today, or maybe yesterday, I'm not sure, but talking about just sort of where you guys are related to the Mountain West and the league and realignment. And I don't want to provide that narrative. I'm going to let you provide that narrative here. You know, as you've gone through the last several weeks and some of the things that you've come out with in the last 24 hours, let's say, tell me where everything sits today with Boise State.
So yes, a statement came out today, and it's something that, you know, this realignment conversation, you know, started back when you heard rumors of Texas and Oklahoma, and it hasn't stopped. And so, you know, I've spent a lot of time over the last, you know, I guess 2 months, you know, on realignment discussions, and you know, not to go back to the statement, but I've been consistent since the day I arrived here. We will always do what's in the best interest of this institution, and that requires a level of due diligence. But I've also said that we are happy and excited for the partnership with the Mountain West and where we believe it can go. And so, you know, my duty is to Bronco Nation and our constituents and this institution. And I believe that we have a bright future, and there's a lot that is still left for us to accomplish, but I'm excited for what's next within this conference and what conference realignment looks like many years from now. I feel like, Mike, that since I was in high school, the conference realignment has been a conversation, and I don't necessarily see it ending. My job is to always put us in the best possible position and control what I can in that process. And that's the message to our staff and our student athletes and to our supporters within this community and nationally, being a national brand. And I'm excited, what these historic changes in this industry are going to bring and the opportunities that it may provide us.
Well, as you know, change has been constant, as you've already alluded to. And look, there's more on the horizon, more than likely at some point in time. And I think, you know, the NCAA Constitution Committee and what they're going to go through over the next year or so and how that might affect the industry will play a role in some of that as well. So I think you're right to say, you know, you've got to assess where you are as an institution, assess where you are in your conference, and make the best decision based upon, in your case, Bronco Nation. And I know you're doing that. So let's ask some questions here that, they can be quick answers, or you can dive in a little bit more if you want. But I'm curious.
Yeah, sure.
You said you talked about the time we were in high school. If I recall in my research, your grandfather was actually a team doctor for Coach Don Haskins at UTEP, and so you've got a historical perspective on athletics. Was his involvement with college athletics the impetus for you deciding that this was a possible future career?
It's an interesting story. It definitely, the seeds were planted there. My father, I mean, some of my first memories were at UTEP football and basketball games. And so the athletics is all I've ever known. And you know, I wasn't fortunate enough to play at the college level. I wasn't good enough. But, you know, it was always something that was pulling at my heartstrings. And, you know, a chance, you know, an encounter, my mom and Mac Rhodes' wife, they taught together, and I had reached a crossroads in my life, I was actually contemplating dropping out of school. And because of my mom and my aunt and some other family members that probably cared about me and my future more than I did at that point in time in my life, it led to me meeting Mac. And, you know, that's one of the, you know, you look back and you realize you're not an outlier and that there's a bigger plan at play. And, you know, I'll forever be grateful for what he's, done for me. And that one conversation led to me changing my degree at the University of Texas and committing to a path of getting to this chair and becoming an athletic director. And so there's so many people along the way that have played a role in that, but that's really where it started for me. And I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah. I had no connection. I know you and Mac have been together for a long time, but I didn't know that part of the connectivity, which is really pretty powerful. Right. So I guess it's really unfair for me to ask maybe what the number one thing or a couple of things that you have learned from being around Mac and working with Mac. I'm sure you've got a whole list, but is there something that really has stood out based upon what you just shared?
One of the things that I learned early on, and when I first met him, he was, I think he was an assistant AD. And so to see how far he's come, and I'm biased, but I think he's one of the best in the industry. One of the things that I always, and as an intern, when I first went to UTEP, I didn't get to deal with Mac on a daily basis, but I was always watching and learning from him. And the way he treated people, Mike, he knew every custodian's name. He knew every staff member's name. He knew their significant other's names, their children's names. He truly cares. And one of his, he says it a lot, and it's one of my favorite quotes. You can tell the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him. And that was something that I watched in action, and how that impacted his leadership style, and it just it led me to have a tremendous amount of belief in who he was, and ultimately led to some amazing changes in my life, going from UTEP to the University of Akron, as a Texas kid and never lived outside the state, to go to Ohio of all places. But I went, I met my wife there. And so everything has purpose, and just really grateful for what, opportunities that's provided, and to see him grow along the way, and who he was as an AD at Akron to who he is today. I can't say enough nice things about him, and he's truly one of the best.
When Hunter was with you guys at Akron as well, right?
That's right. Hunter actually brought my wife from Virginia. So my wife was in college athletics. She was in marketing. I was in development, and ultimately your social groups are, the people you're around with the most. And that led to us dating. And fortunately, she joined me at the University of Houston. And then Hunter, a short time later, after becoming, I believe, the FCS AD of the year at Coastal Carolina, became our deputy AD at the University of Houston. And I was fortunate. I mentioned earlier, I had an opportunity to go with Mac to Missouri, and Hunter ended up getting the job at Houston, and I stayed on with him, and I'm grateful for that path.
Three good guys right there. So a couple more quick ones here. You had a goal of visiting 100 donors in the first 100 days. Did you get it done?
I did not. Unfortunately, I did not. Now, if you account for some of the Zoom calls I was able to at least talk to 100, but I'm probably 75 in. 75 in. I don't know, Mike, and maybe it was you, whoever came up with the 100-day plan. I feel like it needs to be a 300-day plan. I did the best I could, but I don't know how people do it. I was able to meet with staff. I met with every staff member, within that first semester, and even that, I was a little bit behind, but it's so important, those initial conversations and just to get to know your people. I'm still grinding away and working towards that.
Well, hey, with between the coaching search and the pandemic, we're going to give you credit for the Zoom calls too. How about that? We'll do that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So look, I know family is really important to you. What does a good day off with your family look like?
I have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and they're everything to me. My wife does just a tremendous job of holding down the home, and it really allows me to, you know, probably sometimes be more for my staff here than I am for them. And so I'm grateful for her. And so, you know, when I'm able to disconnect, and just spend time with them, you know, we, you know, all of them are in doing their various games and dances and other things. And, but, you know, a perfect day is really, turning the cell phone off and you know, throwing the ball with them and, you know, especially here in Boise, there's so much to do outside. We spend a lot of time hiking and swimming and trying to enjoy the outdoors. And, you know, it's pretty simple, but, you know, with what comes with sitting in this chair, you know, that and hopefully they know how much it means to me and one day will, but that ability just to disconnect, they provide such a perspective, you know, of life in general. And my worst day, you know, I can walk in that door and they don't care about me, you know, or what I put out on social or the decisions I'm making. They care about me as their father. And that means the world to me.
That's awesome. Well, so it was actually Hunter Yurecek that referenced your faith and your family and Mexican food and the Dave Matthews Band. You probably would have figured that out eventually, right? But
Hunter's a Dave Matthews fan, by the way. So that was something that connected us. I've seen Dave with Hunter, so
that's awesome. So let's end on this. So if that is, you know, I always got to talk about food, right? So what's your all-time favorite Mexican restaurant? It can be in Texas, it can be in Boise, it can be somewhere else. You know, like, give us a recommendation.
Ovilas, in El Paso, Texas. It used to be called Leo's and it just so happens he's my godfather. But you know, there wasn't a week that I can remember growing up that we didn't eat there, through high school. And that's my first stop when I go home. It's a family restaurant and it's been around for 50 some odd years. And it's right there on Mesa in El Paso, Texas. So anyone going to visit UTEP, please hit it up and tell Andy Avila that Jeremiah sent you and he'll take care of you.
That's awesome. So, you know, we're not only serving up leadership council here, things going on in the industry, we're going to give restaurant recommendations too. So, look, it's been great. Our time has flown by. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today and your friendship as we've developed that over the last several years. And so thanks for your time, Jeremiah.
Thank you, Mike. I can't thank you enough for having me and good luck finishing out this semester.
All right. You've been listening to Jeremiah Dickey, the athletic director from Boise State University. This has been From the Chair with Mike Hamilton. I hope you'll subscribe to From the Chair on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks and have a great day. We'll see you next time.